Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Poole, and my guest today is my good friend Maureen Armand. And Maureen is going to talk about the Women Against War initiative that will take place this Monday, May 6th, in the at the Capitol. So Maureen, tell us a little bit about the event.
Well, Cynthia, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to do so. Women Against War became aware of the fact that there has been, since 2011, an international call called Global Days of Action on Military Spending. And it was conceived as a way to invite citizens from all over the world to stand together to not only study and understand the absolute drain of, quote, defense budgets on all of us globally, but also to stand together and advocate for a policy shift, or as this year's call says, move the money, demilitarize, focus on people's needs. So Women Against War, first of all, found this to be, of course, totally consistent with our desire to advocate always for a policy that looks to diplomacy and international relationship and State Department support over military militaristic solutions in terms of foreign policy issues and international conflicts. So it seemed like a natural fit, and we wanted to become part of these Global Days of Action. And the Global Days of Action is a call that goes from U.S. Tax Day, mid-April, to early mid-May. I think this year it's the 13th, when the Stockholm Institute, Peace Institute, which is a federation that goes back to the late 1800s, that tries to create a kind of a global connection among peace advocates, releases the figures on the international expenditures for war that drain all of our budgets. I have to tell you, though, Cynthia, that part of my desire to have Women Against War participate came from a recent visit that you documented with an interview of Kathy Kelly. Kathy Kelly is internationally known, as your listeners would recognize, peace activist who definitely has put her life on the line over and over again to try to draw attention to the fact that we need to invest our energies in peace rather than war. And when she was here, she talked quite a bit about the fact that she travels constantly to Afghanistan. She supports the work of a group of young people there who are trying to create an inter-ethnic peace community and learn how to live together peacefully and how to think about influencing their own government's commitment to people over war. And Kathy talked about the fact that there is so little, and it's hard to say this because this is painful for us as Americans to hear, I think, but there is so little good that has been accomplished through the war in Afghanistan. We have expended endless resources. We have expended the precious lives of so many human beings, our own young people, as well as contractors who have gone to work in Afghanistan, and NGO workers, as well as the absolute horror for life of the Afghan people, who not only have suffered great losses, both in terms of deaths and injury, but also total disruption, so that the refugee problem in Afghanistan is huge, the internal refugee and external refugee problem. So nothing. The schools that were supposedly built have not been built. The hospitals don't exist. The list goes on and on and on. They talk about ghost projects that are on paper only. Women's rights have not moved forward. The government is in total strife. When Kathy was here, the university in Kabul had to send out messages to students, don't come, we can't pay the teachers. I mean, the list is endless of what's not happened, and the state of disruption politically and militarily is still very real. After all of these years, our longest war, and that just underscored for me the fact that we have to stand up and say as powerfully as we can that war is not the answer, and expending more and more and more of our resources as a country for war over peace will get us nowhere. As Dr. King says, you know, will lead to our demise as a nation, both spiritual and physical. So I want to underscore that that's what's motivated me and I think my colleagues in Women Against War who are participating this year.
Well, you know, I'm a keen observer of what's going on. I read stuff, I listen to stuff, I watch stuff. And what I find so disheartening, Maureen, and I don't know if you and I have ever talked about this before, and that's the fact that the average person who goes to work, who pays taxes, who works hard for their family, but they don't ask the most important question, and that's who are funding the elected officials? I mean, do you know who's given to Gillibrand? Do you know who's given to Schumer? How much money is given to them from the military-industrial complex, and what have they promised the lobbyists in return? I think until that is addressed, we could do all the demonstrations we want, but yet I don't think they'll come to any solution. You know, what do you think?
Well, I think you're right. I think a system has evolved, and it's evolved since World War II, and General Eisenhower, our general president, much lauded general, warned us, I mean, beware is a very strong word for a president to use.
Yeah.
He could see the evolution of this. I'm giving a speech on Monday, and what I'm talking about is the elephant in the room that just becomes more and more voracious. It's a system that's been set up, a revolving door system where people who represent and come out of the arms industry the arms industry sounds like we're talking about guns alone and weapons alone, but the arms industry really envelops so many aspects of our economic life, move into places of lobbying. So I think that one of the things I think you're right. I think people are busy in their lives, and so it seems huge. But I guess what I'd like to do, maybe in answer to your question, is to point out a few resources that people could look at. Because I think that sometimes we as citizens who are busy with our lives feel like, well, what can I do? And how do I even begin to understand this? So let me just mention a few resources people could look at. There is at Brown University in Rhode Island, there's an institute called the Watson Institute for Public Affairs. And they have been doing something called the Costs of War Project. And what they do is they really look at the data. They do what we don't have time to do. They focus on looking at, first of all, what is the human cost of the last few, since fiscal year 2001, what are the human costs of these wars, for example, during that period? And what are the civilian costs, you know, both our costs and the nations where wars have been being waged? But they also look at and they disaggregate and they do it very carefully how much we've spent and what the implications of that are. So I think that when people see that number, you know, it becomes something where you feel like, I have to do something. This is absurd. So, for example, the cost of the Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Syrian endeavors in the last few years, the estimate is $5.9 billion. $1 trillion of U.S. money, that's taxpayers' money coming out of the lifeblood of these people, as you say, who are so busy with their own lives. I mean, that makes you stand up and say, well, wait a second, what would that equal? And they also point out that that $5.9 trillion doesn't include the interest, the cost of borrowing on the wars, which they estimate at possibly as much as $8 trillion in the next 40 years. Mm-hmm. One of the things that is kind of startling is that one of the ways that the budget, the quote defense budget, has been augmented is by what's been called a contingency overseas operation slush fund, essentially, that is not under taxpayer purview and is not being paid for with taxpayer money, current money. It's being paid for on a credit card, essentially. So our children and grandchildren and their grandchildren will be paying and paying and paying for these wars of choice in the last few years. All while we're not expending money on the current administration, in fact, taking money over and over again from the State Department, where true security is going to lie in our learning and our funding and our commitment to diplomacy. So I would recommend to your listeners that they take a look at the Cost of War Project, which they can find at costofwar@brown.edu. I'd also like to point out, and we're going to try to point out to New York State legislators on Monday, that if you look at something like the National Priorities Project, which is nationalpriorities.org, what you can do is look at this huge, overwhelming, you know, maw of a defense budget in total, you know, compared to our what we spend on human need and social need, you know, what the piece of the pie in general is. But they also have a tool that allows taxpayers to put in trade-offs. And you can disaggregate how much of whatever part of the country you want to look at money goes to whatever part of the budget you want to look at. So if you want to look at the defense budget and you want to look at, say, New York State, you can put that in. And what you find out is that for those wars, fiscal year 2001 to 2019, United States – or New York State taxpayers have paid $432 billion to cover the cost of those wars. When you disaggregate the amount of money that flows to the federal government and what the percentage of the federal budget goes to defense, $432 billion. Not only can you disaggregate that, but also what you can do is take a look at what the trade-offs would be. So, for example, I have a chart in front of me where they talk about, as the New York State Fiscal Institute says, you know, we just are always lagging in New York State in terms of being able to come up with the funds to support human need, infrastructure need, you know, address climate change. So what you can look at, I'm looking at, is a chart that would say that $432 billion, and I won't go through the whole list, would represent 50.42 million households with solar electricity and 8.72 million people receiving health care, adults, and 15.91 million children receiving health care, and 206 million students receiving 5,815 four-year Pell grants. I mean, the list goes on and on. So when you start to look at that, it becomes clear that we have to educate ourselves as citizens, and we have to say, wait a second, we are the greatest and largest lobbying group. The military-industrial complex certainly makes use of insider knowledge, both of the defense industry and the military, to stand in line and lobby our congressional leaders. But we need to begin to do the same thing. Just another way you can look at New York State contributions when you use the National Priorities Project. In 2018 alone, our piece of the pie, us being New York State, was $62.4 billion, our piece of the military defense budget pie. And again, you can disaggregate what that would equal. if that money was actually being used for social infrastructure, climate issues. So I highly recommend that people take a look at the nationalpriorities.org website, because it really allows you to begin to see what that flow of money is. And another tool that people can look at, it's a long-standing effort by the War Resisters League, which is warresisters.org, which is, again, to do what they call look at where your income tax money really goes. And they focus on this every year around tax day. And they have a wonderful chart. And they, again, disaggregate what that cost is. And they essentially say that when you look at the total picture of U.S. military spending, say for 2019's budget that you're looking at, again, billions of dollars beyond comprehension. And when you take that and you look at what I started to talk about, the fact that people who are on the ground and don't have an axe to grind in terms of proving that, you know, all of this money has gone to some good, are saying what's been left behind is pain and suffering and disruption and none of the good that we fool ourselves into thinking. And so that contrast is so overwhelming to me that it kind of lights a fire that, that you know, you hope that we as citizens can you know, stand together and begin to say there's got to be a change in the calculus. This elephant has got to stop being fed. So that's what Women Against War is going to be doing on Monday. We're going to stand on the steps at the Legislative Office Building to start with and hold a press conference and hope that some media will come so we can raise the platform of our conversation. We'll be wearing black to affirm the seriousness of our purpose and green to affirm that we want to move the money to life-affirming life-affirming budgetary focus. We want our legislative leaders to look at the same thing. I am, as you point out, it must be very difficult for people who are running for office to turn their back on the massive amount of money that those who would like to perpetuate this ever, ever, ever increasing, ever agreed to massive, you know, transfer of U.S. taxpayer wealth to the defense industry without truly creating any kind of national security or international peace, then it must be very hard. But we have to light a fire under ourselves to be able to really articulate that. I suspect to many people this sounds like Pollyanna kind of thinking, but the truth is we are sealing our fate. We can't meet the needs of people. We can't deal with an infrastructure that is crumbling by all accounts. We can't and aren't addressing the absolute beyond comprehension almost perils of climate change. And yet we can bleed and bleed and bleed money to the dead end of war. And the irrationality of it is beyond beyond comprehension. And as Dr. Martin Luther King said over 50 years ago, so clearly, a nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. And to quote him one other time, because I think he saw it as General Eisenhower saw it, we have to reorder our priorities so that the pursuit of peace will take precedence over the pursuit of war, finally understanding that our greatest defense is to take offensive action to remove conditions of poverty, insecurity, and injustice as an absolute necessity for the soul of the nation, as well as the survival of man. He saw where we were going 50 years ago and basically, I think, so clearly articulates that this is not an irrational Pollyanna vision. This is an absolute essential, this kind of move the money thinking. invest in people has become a priority for all of us. And this bipartisan agreement that, yes, we'll keep saying yes, 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 yes to money for war under the guise that that, in fact, will buy us security is folly. It's a fantasy land that's fed by those who profit.
So for people who are listening to this,
yes,
it's Saturday morning, May 4th. For people who are listening to this and want to participate, I might not be able to come on Monday. How best can they do so?
Ah, that is such a good question, and I wish I had an easy answer. I really do think, I guess what I have been trying to say is that the number one thing is to read and understand the nature of this kind of bipartisan agreement to fund war that is essentially draining our capacity to fund human need and to look to the future for our, you know, planetary salvation, essentially. So I think informing themselves, so looking at the Cost of War Project, looking at the War Resisters League material, really taking a look at the National Priorities Project, those things would really help. Another person to look at is a writer by the name of William Hartung, who's really focused his work over the years on looking at military expenditure in the United States. And one of the things he looks at is the fact that one of the arguments always is, well, how can we change this calculus so that people don't lose jobs because people make money out of the defense industry. And he's done a lot of careful study along with other people like Nina Crawford from the Cost of War Project that really point out that the defense industry does not create any more near as much jobs as, say, alternative energy commitment would. So William Hartung. So people should inform themselves. And I think that, and let me just point out another source of information that I was not aware of until Kathy Kelly came, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say this. Apparently, every few months, the United States government commissioned a number of years ago studies, first of all, on Iraq and also on Afghanistan, called the SIGIR and SIGAR studies on reconstruction and how things are going in terms of as we spend endless amounts of money on the post-war situations in those countries where war has devastated both our soldiers, their people. And in both those cases, the SIGIR and the SIGAR studies that are constant and are government-funded and, you know, get expounded at West Point and get expounded in our government, basically point out that nothing and or very little has been accomplished. I mean, our own government studies indicate that. So I think people need to look at that. So people need to inform themselves. Then people need to empower themselves and join with others. For example, Women Against War is simply a network of women who are passionately concerned about the future of our children and the security that can only come through peaceful solution to global conflict. So join organizations like Bethlehem Neighbors for Peace or locally or Veterans for Peace or Women Against War. Mm-hmm. Empower themselves. Believe in their heart that as citizens they have as much – no – they have more right to lobby and to speak to these issues than any lobbyist being paid to be a shill for the defense industry has. So I think people need to internally say, this is my right, this is my capacity, this is my obligation. A long time back, before the war in Iraq, I read something that, and it kind of confirmed my own quietness over the years, that people are afraid when it comes to foreign policy issues that they don't understand.
Mm.
I think people's guts understand when they hear this kind of information that this is wrong and it's a dead end and we can't be silent. And so I think people need to internally empower themselves and then empower themselves by seeing if they can align join with other people who are working on these issues. Because, again, as you point out, people are really busy, and none of us can do this alone. It feels like the little boy with his finger, you know, fending off the collapse of a, you know, of a dike holding back, you know, the flood. It feels like, how can I possibly do that?
Right.
But the bottom line is, together we have a voice that can be very powerful. I don't know if that's very helpful, but I think, you know, read, learn, understand, empower your internal being to believe you have the right to speak, and then join with others in speaking.
So if people want to participate on Monday,
yes,
or else just become part of Women Against War,
yes,
and the Capital District, what can they do? Is there a website, a phone number?
And there is a website, womenagainstwar.org, where they can join, and there's information there on who they could contact. People can come Monday. I think one of the things that happens when you label an organization is that it starts to become, becomes like a fortress, you know, like, well, that's them. But these organizations are open-doored. So I think it's good that you're pointing that out. So come on Monday, feel that is your place as well as anyone else's to stand on the LOB steps. Join us there. Take a look at womenagainstwar.org's website. People can contact me at AUMANDMAUREEN at Gmail, Amand Maureen at Gmail. Those are ways for people to get in touch.
I do have a question. You're talking about an extraordinary amount of money that's being spent by the defense industry to keep this whole thing going, to feed the beast. The people that are involved in the defense industry, they probably are most likely or do know the fact that money is taken away from, I want to say, the general welfare of the country, like infrastructure and, you know, education for young people and food and clothing and health care. I can't understand how these people can do this and keep it going perpetually, and they live their life as if nothing is going on. I find that so incomprehensible. What do you think, Maureen?
Well, I think that we all build mental walls around things that we don't want to address. And I also think that there's great, there has been and continues, and it's conscious, I'm sure, on the part of those who profit from war on a very high level, to convince all of us that our defense, our true defense as a nation, is based on being, quote, number one, you know, being the strongest, having the best weapons.
Mm-hmm.
History defies that. History teaches over and over and over again that that's folly. Empires fall. Nations who build their strength on war and on their destructive capacity fail. I mean, that's a given. But I think in the little scheme of our own individual lives, there's a lot of effort to make people, convince people that they are working towards something that's good. So I think that's part of it, that people can be fooled. I think, again, when you're a little cog in a big, big, giant wheel, you know, at the top, you know, you may be very conscious of the fact that you are, you know, pushing this wheel in order to make a lot of money for yourself. And those who are getting huge amounts, government leaders, I think, you know, people sell their souls for large amounts of money. I think on a small scale, people convince themselves that they're part of a really good thing. And that's hard. I mean, you don't want to accuse people of evil intention. I, I do think that it's alerting ourselves, waking ourselves up to the reality of history and the reality of how this whole machine operates and how this giant elephant in the room is, as again Dr. King says, functions as a demonic, destructive suction tube pulling everything to itself. I think that you know, it's a matter of raising one's consciousness, I guess.
So, Maureen, I will more than likely see you on Monday. So give us information, contact information one more time.
Sure. We're meeting, I probably should be clear, we're meeting on the steps of the State Street steps of the Legislative Office Building, which is across from the Capitol on State Street. At the press conference is called for 12:30, so we'll be meeting to organize ourselves with signs and our message around 12:15. That press conference will not last a really long time. It will only has a couple of speakers and a wonderful song to underscore all of this. Then we're going to walk across the street to the Capitol. People need to have to know that we have to just go through Capitol security. We're going to lobby and outside of the assembly chamber. Following the press conference, we have handouts to kind of underscore the same information that you and I have been talking about. And then we've been invited to be recognized from the floor of the assembly by Assemblyman Phil Steck. And that, again, is a way of underscoring the fact that this is a citizen's right to be there speaking to leadership about issues of war and peace.
Thank you, Maureen. Good luck on Monday, and thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope you become involved with Maureen's group, Women Against War. So if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Thanks, Maureen, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a wonderful
weekend. Thank you so
much,
Cynthia, for the opportunity to speak.